Today's script reading comes from 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18, and in the Pew Bible, that's page 966. Again, 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18. So we do not lose our heart, though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to see you. It's great to be together. I know we have quite a few of you who are visiting with us today. Some are traveling through this area or visiting family. It's the spring break time of year, and so some families are able to be together because of that. But especially if you're from the Lakeway area, the Morristown, Hamlin County, or one of our surrounding communities or counties, and you're visiting with us today, we're especially blessed by your presence. And if you're looking for a church home, if you're, as we'll be talking about today, and I'll say more about this in a moment, looking for something real in your life spiritually, something that's lasting, and maybe you're just investigating. You're not quite sure where to look for it, but you'd like to know more about us here or like to sit down and talk with us. We would love to have that opportunity. And we invite you to be a part of our worship services anytime. But we also invite you, if you've got questions, to ask us, because we would love to tell you about our Lord and Savior, about the difference He's made in our lives, and about us as His church as well. One thing I want to mention before I forget, tonight at 5 o'clock we're going to meet for a worship service, and tonight it's especially going to be a time where we sing together. We from time to time use our Sunday evenings in that way, and tonight's one of those Sundays. And then after that we're going to have a potluck meal, just enjoy each other's company and fellowship and some good food as well. And so everybody is invited to that, visitors, guests, you as well, and we would love to have you join us. But for our members, just keep that in mind as you plan your activities the rest of the day today, and bring a dish or two with you as well. Today is the beginning of a new series that we're calling Looking for Something Real. And for our members, we're especially using the next several weeks as an opportunity to invite friends and family. That's true every week. I don't want to make it sound like that we're just doing this as a sort of a one-time thing. But especially the lessons beginning today and going for the next several weeks, you could say that they're more evangelistic in nature, but they certainly, I hope, will serve and bless those of us who are Christians. And also, as they bless those of us who are Christians, I hope that some of the things that we share and say during these messages might provide you with certain ideas or starting points in how to engage others in spiritual conversations. Our theme this year is the Lord's words, come follow me. It's about being a disciple. And sometimes talking about discipleship with others, engaging or initiating that conversation, is tricky and difficult. And I think some of the things we're going to be saying today and in the weeks ahead will give us maybe some foundational materials and how to start those kinds of conversations. Because as I said earlier, you don't have to look very far, and maybe for some of us, it just begins by looking in the mirror. A lot of people today recognize that they're looking for something more out of life. That the stuff that this life has to offer, yeah, there's a lot of good to it, but there's a lot of bad and ugly and disappointing and discouraging. And at the end of it all, if in this life it's all the hope that you have, that's a pretty empty and shallow existence. And so we've got to consider, is there something more real? Is there something more than just what meets the eye? And speaking of things that meet the eye, if you're around my age, we're the generation that really has seen the great explosion and development of special effects when it comes to television and movies and entertainment. I grew up as a Star Wars kid, and those special effects were really cool, but if you remember the second round of George Lucas's Star Wars movies, that was the beginning of digital special effects. And when you went and saw the movies, you're like, yeah, they did a pretty good job, but I can tell that's fake. I can tell it's just not quite good enough to convince me that this is the real deal. But in the past 20 to 25 years, that's really changed, right? And for example, having three small children, especially with Beau right now, he's 4 years old, and we'll be watching something on television or we'll be watching a movie, and you know, he thinks everything that he sees is real, and it's very convincing. And one of the things as a parent you have to say sometimes is, all right, that's not real. You've got to distinguish, you know, the real from the fake, the real from the fantasy. And as parents, sometimes we've got difficult decisions to make there, but that's a regular conversation. Here's what's real, and here's what's not real. But I've learned that that's not just a conversation I need to have with four-year-olds. It's a conversation I need to have with myself sometimes. Because now I sometimes will see something. Sometimes I'll see like a video posted on social media, or I'll see a picture, and I see that, and I think, okay, now is this real, or has this been enhanced? Is this Photoshopped? And I'm not even talking about stuff with nefarious purposes behind it. I'm talking about just stuff for the sake of entertainment. I'll see something, and I'll be like, I'm not really sure if that's real or not. And so I'll find a website. There are websites out there that will discuss what's real, what's not real, what's been Photoshopped, what's been enhanced, the special effects that were used. And so I'll look up this stuff, and I'll say, you know, is this commercial that I saw, was this real, or did a computer do this? And they'll usually give you an answer. But now we live in a time where if you start telling people, you know, I looked up on this website and I saw that that commercial that everybody's talking about, it's not really real. Somebody will say, well, how can you believe that website? That website's not real either. That's a fake website. And then before you know it, what happens? We have reached a place in our world today where you can't distinguish in your mind, sometimes in your heart, what's real and what's fake. What's reality and what's fantasy? And sometimes the stuff can be lighthearted and humorous, but sometimes it can be very serious and divisive. And we've reached a point right now in our world, largely because of technology, but there's other things involved as well, where a lot of people are wondering, is anything real anymore? Can I trust anything? Can I trust anyone? And that's true when it comes to spiritual matters, isn't it? We've reached a point now where, you know, I can stand up here and I can speak of God and what I believe. And maybe in private conversations, you know, somebody or you, we can have different conversations. And you say, well, you know, here's what I believe. And we start going back and forth. And before you know it, people start having all these alternative theories and conspiracy theories. It's like, well, how can you really know that? And is that real or is that fake? Or, you know, is that just some myth or is that just some sort of legend? Or has this just been handed down to you because that's what your parents believed or that's the culture you grew up in? How can you really trust what you believe? It's a conversation of real versus fake, reality versus fantasy. And some people have come to the conclusion you just can't know. And when you think about that, it's a really sad place to be. Because it treats all of this life and our existence as, well, it's just an illusion. And really, you follow that out logically, it's rather meaningless. I hope you're here today because deep down within yourself, whether you feel like you have found it or not, you want something real. You want something that you can hold on to. You want something that lasts. Again, if you don't have it and you're looking for it, I hope whether it's today or in the weeks ahead, or maybe in private conversations, we help you find that. Maybe for some of us who are Christians and been Christians for a long time, maybe we like to portray we have that something real, but maybe deep down we wonder if all we're grasping at is air passing through our hands. But hopefully, for all of us, we find the stuff that's real, the stuff that's really real. It's the kind of stuff that Paul talks about in this passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I'm going to go over these three verses that Jeff read for us, and I'm going to talk about stuff that's real, and then I'm going to talk about stuff that's really real. Now, in saying that, everything here is real. But Paul is going to provide three contrasts in these three verses, and he's going to say, yeah, there's a lot of real stuff in this life, but I want you to be able to find and to see and to hold on to stuff that's even more real than what you see with your eyes or you hold with your hands. The first thing that he's going to talk about in verse 16 is our outer self, our physical bodies. Again, beginning part of chapter 4, verse 16, by the way, if you have one of the Pew Bibles, that's on page 966. We're pretty much going to stay in this passage, except for one other passage towards the end. But 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, Paul says, "So we do not lose heart." Then he says, "Though our outer self is wasting away." He's talking about our physical bodies. You don't have to live very long to realize that your physical body, it's not built to last. It gets sick. Things don't always work the way you want them to. Things ache. Things break down. They decay. They deteriorate. And there's a lot of that, you know, it's just not fun. You don't welcome it. But here's the reality is, it's real, isn't it? Your body reminds you how real your body is sometimes. Whether it's when you wake up in the morning, you've got a stiff neck, or if you're like me this time of year, spring's beautiful, things are in bloom, it's awesome, but the sinuses, they're telling you, yep, your body's far from perfect. It's not perfectly conditioned for this world. And as you get older and older, you realize this thing's not meant to last. Now, you can live in denial of that. You can try to ignore that, and you can try to run away from it, but you're not going to hide from it forever. And sometimes we're best at denying that reality to ourselves, but everybody around us is like, yeah, you know, you're not getting any younger. That's just reality. And in some ways, that's a blessing to us. It's to remind us that this physical existence is not to last forever, and we'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. But here's the point. Your physical existence is real. Now, that might sound really elementary, but your life in this body, it means something. And for people who say, you know, this is all there is, I feel, you know, Russ was talking about alternative worldviews in some ways around the Lord's Supper. I feel really sorry for people who think that this physical existence is all there is. Because when you get to the end of life, what do you have to say to somebody? What comfort is there? What purpose can you speak? You know, and I don't want to get too morbid or even too sad in saying this. You know, I think about our loved ones, my loved ones, our brothers and sisters, when they pass away. At the times of death and at a funeral, you think about that body, and those of you, you know, that I've done burial services for family members and funerals, one thing I try to highlight is what this person did in this body, it meant something. It was real. But now this body, it was just a shell, right? And so it is returning to the dust from which it came. But there's something beyond that. But imagine telling somebody in that moment, this is all there is. Ash to ash, dust to dust, and then that's it. What this person did had no purpose, lasting purpose. Their existence, it now ceases completely. No, it was real. And it means something. It continues to mean something. That's because of the second part of verse 16, the really real that Paul gets to here, our inner self. This first contrast. The really real part is our inner self that Paul continues in verse 16. He says, though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. The truth is, we all know we have an inner self. We have an inner self that thinks, that feels, an inner self that distinguishes between right and wrong. Now, I realize that sometimes we don't all have the exact same standard of right and wrong. But everybody believes that there is a right way to live, there's a wrong way to live. There's a right way to be treated, there's a wrong way to be treated. And that inner self, you have that inner dialogue within yourself that's If you're like me, it's always going on. It reminds me, hey, you are more than just flesh and blood. And in that inner self, there's more than just even thoughts and feelings. There's a spirit. There's a soul. Now, the one thing that I would sometimes like to do is to be able to get into the mind or even the soul of other people, because I don't know if everybody experiences life the exact same way that I do, but in talking with lots of people and in watching how other people live, I'm of the conviction that all of us know deep down that there is a soul that we are. It's not just a part of us, it's actually who we are more than our physical existence. It's the part of us that is touched when we see great acts of love and sacrifice and compassion. It's the part of us that boils up in anger when we see injustice, when we see mistreatment, when we see abuse. It's the part of us that longs for something more. Paul gets to that if you skip down a few verses to chapter 5. In verses 4 and 5, this contrast he continues with there, he says, "For while we are still in this tent," he's talking about this physical body, he says, "we groan, being burdened, not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life." What's Paul saying there? We know our bodies are breaking down, but there's something within us that longs for something even more. So that which is mortal, that which is decaying and dying, it yearns, it longs for something even far greater. And he continues in verse 5 by saying, "He who has prepared us for this very thing is God." God has something prepared for us that's greater than this existence. That brings us to our next contrast, going back to chapter 4, verse 17. The next real thing is our affliction. Verse 17, Paul will say, "For this light momentary affliction is..." Well, we'll stop right there. This light momentary affliction. When you go through trials, when you go through times of suffering, when you experience the pain and the hurt and the disappointment and the heartache, whether these pains are physical or emotional, maybe they're social, they're in our relationships, but when you go through things that afflict your mind, your body, your soul, that's real, isn't it? By the way, don't ever tell somebody that the pain that they're experiencing is not real. That's not exactly the best way to encourage somebody. It's not the best way to walk through somebody through their pain and hurt. It might be different than mine. Things might hurt you in ways that they don't hurt me and vice versa. But when you are afflicted in life, that is real, isn't it? But it's interesting, as Paul talks about the realness of our afflictions, what does he say? He says they're light and momentary. It almost sounds like Paul is making little or making light of our afflictions. He's not. Actually, as you read Paul's letters, even this book that we call 2 Corinthians, Paul's going to say, you know what, there's a lot of stuff that troubles me. There's a lot of stuff that hurts me. There's a lot of stuff that I struggle through. In some ways, that's in the midst of what he's saying right here. But what else is he saying? He's saying, these afflictions, they're pointing me to something. They're preparing me for something. Let me give you some easy to identify kinds of afflictions. And I'm using the word affliction pretty loosely here. Sometimes we get hungry. Sometimes we get thirsty. Sometimes that can get at a pretty serious level or intensity. When you experience those things, deep down you know something, don't you? You know that there is something out there that can alleviate your hunger and that can satisfy your thirst. You know there's an answer to that because you feel this pain, you feel this suffering. Think about when you're sick. When you are sick, You long for, you anticipate, you know what it feels like to be well. You can imagine that, and that's real to you. That's not just your imagination. If you've ever been hurt, recovering from surgery, you know that pain's part of this process, but you know also know on the other side that this is preparing me for something better. Loneliness. That's a serious thing. I don't think we talk about loneliness enough in our society right now. There's a lot of lonely people. And sometimes for really good reasons. But deep down, what they long for, that connection, that social interaction, that's real to them. And they know what it means to have meaningful, lasting relationships. Why do I give you all these examples? Because our afflictions, our pain, our suffering, they prepare us. These are Paul's words, not my words, in verse 17. They prepare us for something that's even more real than our affliction. That's our next thing that's really real. And that's glory. Paul, as he continues this verse, he says that our affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. Beyond all comparison. Paul's not making light of affliction. He's just saying that in comparison to the glory that awaits us, it's going to seem but for a moment. It's going to seem as nothing, even though in the moment it is certainly something. But he says, this is preparing you for something really far beyond all comparison, really beyond our full comprehension. The glory of what is yet to come. Like our hunger or our thirst or our sickness or our hurt or our loneliness. On the other side of those things, we know that there is something better that we look forward to, that we anticipate. Paul is saying in the same way, the afflictions of this life, the hurt and the pain, they point you to something, to a day, to an experience. He says, it is overwhelming, the weight of this glory. You might not be able to see it, he says, but to some degree you get to experience it. If you go back again to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 5, just a few verses down, where he says, He has prepared us for this, he who has prepared us for this very thing is God. And he says, who has given us the Spirit as what? As a guarantee. God's Spirit within us, within the believer who's come to Jesus Christ, gives you a bit of a taste of that which is to come. Allows you to anticipate, to look forward, that which God has prepared for us. The Spirit is a down payment, a guarantee, a looking forward to something better. There are people right now who try to tell us that the things that you suffer, the afflictions of this life, they point to the fact that this life, that's just all there is. Because what kind of God would allow this kind of pain and suffering and hurt? What kind of God would allow you to long for something else and not let you have it? Well, they don't see the full story. They are misleading us in that message, because that is a message of the temporary. That is a message that's just mired in the afflictions of this world. And instead of using the afflictions to say, these things point us to the fact that God has something even better for us, those people try to say, there's no God. He's abandoned you. But that runs contrary to everything else we experience in life. And that the things that we long for, anticipate, there is something to satisfy and fulfill, and there is something to satisfy and fulfill our souls. It's not a thing. It's a being. It's God and His Son and His Spirit. That brings us to the third contrast that we find in verse 18. The first real thing is the seen. Paul there will continue by saying, as we look not to the things that are seen. And later in the verse, he will say, for the things that are seen, they're transient. They're real, but they're transient. Again, because of the time that we live in right now, some people like to throw out all kinds of theories as to what this existence is all about. And some people, and I'm not saying this in a humorous kind of fashion. That there are people who really believe that this is just an alternate universe, that there's some sort of other experience in life and realm out there, that this is just sort of an alternate side of that, maybe some sort of other world or underworld, parallel universe kind of thing. Some people, based on movies that were popular several years ago, like say, this is just some sort of Matrix. It's just an illusion. It's just some sort of big trick, some big conspiracy that we're all pawns, that we're a part of this big game or conspiracy. That's a pretty sad existence. Paul says, no, this is real. You've been called to live, and so live. Don't dream up and imagine some sort of alternate theory. This is the real deal. But Paul will say this. There is an optical illusion to this existence, isn't there? Because what you see in front of you, it is temporary. It is transient. It's here for a while. Our existence is here for a while. This world is here for a while. But it's not lasting. And to some, that is a very sad and depressing thought. Why is Paul saying it? Because he says, I don't want you to try to hold on to this stuff. When you try to hold on to this life and all the stuff that comes with this life, it is like grasping for air. It's like trying to hold on to water, hold on to sand. You might get it for a little while, but before you know it, it's all going to slip through your fingers. It's going to be gone. There's nothing really to show for it. So what's Paul's point? He goes, I want you to look beyond what meets the eye. I want you to look beyond what you can hold in your hand. This life is not just based on your physical senses. There's something even greater, and that is the really real, the unseen. In this verse, he will say, look to the things that are unseen, because these are the things that are eternal. That's a powerful word. This is the stuff that lasts. There are things that last a long time on earth, but there is nothing on earth that you can see with your eye or hold in your hand. There is nothing in this life that is eternal. And so all in this passage, and the whole point of this lesson today, is to invite us to look beyond this flesh and blood, this earthly existence. To look beyond just the pain and the hurt that comes with it. To look beyond the scene. To look just a little bit deeper on a spiritual level. To look not with our eyes, but to look from within our souls. And to seek out those things that are really real. The things that last. The things that you can actually hold on to. Not with your hands. With your spiritual heart. I want to close by turning to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11. If you have one of the pew Bibles, it's on page 1007. Hebrews chapter 11 is a chapter that is about seeing the unseen, living by faith, living in a way that we don't allow flesh and blood or afflictions to define and determine who we are. I'm going to skip through just a few verses and say a few things about it. But the writer of Hebrews, what they're talking about here are people who live with this eternal perspective. People who see the unseen, and because they see the unseen, they live with such a perspective. Hebrews chapter 11, you can follow along on the screen or in your Bibles. Chapter 11, verse 1. It says there, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for. And then it says, the conviction of things not seen. Conviction of things that you can't see. That's something you can hold on to, though, a conviction. Not just a fleeting hope, wishful thinking, but something that is true and real. Verse 3, the writer continues by saying, by faith we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. That our existence is not just happenstance, But there is someone greater behind all of this. And when it comes to everything that we see in this life, we recognize behind something that's been created, there is a creator. The writer of Hebrews says, everything that you behold with your eyes, how did this get here? It was made by those things, by the one who is invisible. And then you skip down a little bit later as you go through this chapter. It will go person by person through examples in the Old Testament of people who live by this kind of faith. People who didn't get to see with their eyes everything that they hoped for, everything that they were looking out of life. But guess what? Even though they couldn't see it, they had already found it. Skip down to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13. This will be on the screen as well if you want to follow along there. Talking about these people after they had walked this earth and died, it says, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. What's that saying? It's talking about people who what they were looking for, what they had hoped for, what they had anticipated, the earth could not contain. They said, this life, this existence, it's real, but this isn't what I hope for. I hope for something more. Something that I can hold on to. Something that lasts. And verse 14 continues by saying, for people who speak thus, make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. They're seeking something real. Now, as you read this passage, we call that homeland heaven. God's home. And the home for all of His people, for people who as they walk this earth, they see the unseen. They see beyond their afflictions. They see beyond this flesh. It's hard to do that sometimes because it's so real. This life is so real that sometimes it's really hard to see beyond that. I get that. It's often hard for me. I can stand up here and say we need to walk by faith and not by sight, but you know what? I still walk by sight every day. I use it to drive down the road and get back to my house and pick out the food I want to eat. I use my eyes all the time. And there's a lot I see in the world that weighs me down, that frustrates me, that disappoints me. Sometimes it's stuff that personally comes into contact with my life, and sometimes it's stuff that doesn't even personally touch me, but I just look at it and say, wow, there's so much out there that isn't as it should be. And it's real. And if I'm not careful, the things that are seen and these afflictions that are real can cause me to turn away and not see that which is really real. That which gets to the level of things spiritual, to my soul, and allowing me to connect and commune with my God, and to long for and to live for something that's far more real than all of this. Now, today, I don't know where every one of us stands, but if you're looking for something more real than what you're experiencing in this life, I'm here to tell you, God is the answer. His Son is the answer. That brings me to our church family, our Follow This Week. As we go through this series, I'm going to ask this the same way every week. Because it's on us to go to the world today, to our friends and our family, people who are looking for something real. People who know they need the realness of Jesus Christ. They might not know right now that Jesus is what they need, but they know that they need something more than what they're experiencing right now. Who do you know who's in that situation right now? How can you help them? How can you direct them to Him? Next week, as we continue this series, we're going to talk about Jesus and how He fits within this picture of what is real. He's going to come across a woman who she was looking for something more, something real and something that lasts. And this morning, if you're one of those people that you know this life, it's real, but you know there's got to be more than this. And you know that God and His Son, that they have all the answers, that you need to come to Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Maybe you're to a point where you just need to sit down and talk with somebody. We're happy to have any conversation with you. We have elders after this worship service who will be in the library ready to sit down and talk with you. And hopefully all of us who are members are ready to sit down and talk with you as well. But maybe you're at a point where you are convicted and you're ready to put Jesus Christ on in baptism because you know that He is the most real of all and He has everything that you need. If you need to come to Him in baptism this morning, we hope that you make that decision. For those of us who are Christians, this life is real, and it comes with real hurts and pains. But hopefully it also comes with real love. Real love from brothers and sisters who care for you, who want to help you, who are here to pray with you. If you need to respond this morning, and that's what you need, is just real love and real compassion, we're here to welcome you with open arms. Whatever your need is this morning, we encourage you to come forward while we stand and sing this song.